Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the podcast that takes a light-hearted look at lesser-known London stories with your own personal blue badge professional tourist guides.
She's Fiona.
And she's Alex.
And this is the Ladies in London podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Ladies in London podcast. That sounded almost professional. Oh, God, no.
Now, how am I going to join in with this? Am I going to join in with hello?
I don't like it when I'm professional because it's not my natural habitat. I am very much more chaotic and ridiculous than that. So anyway, welcome gang. Hi, welcome back.
Hello.
It's the Ladies in London podcast in your luggles for another week.
I don't think our USP is professionalism.
No.
So.
What is our USP? If anyone out there knows, let us know, because we've not a clue if we even have a US or a P.
I think we have more. Oh, see, I can't even do a normal
sentence. This is the quality we're after. This is it right here.
What I was trying to say, I think we have more idea of why people like us this week than we do last week, because lots of people have been in touch.
Yay! Thank you, gang. It's been so lovely. And quite a lot of people saying we're kind of getting into our groove, which is totally true. I'm feeling like a human for the first time in a long time. I think we're relaxing into it now. Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we've had some lovely emails. So thank you to everyone who got in touch. And we had so many, we can't do them all, but we've picked out a few of our favourites. We had a lovely email from Megan Gibbons, who is in Ohio.
Ohio.
Which I know I shouldn't, but every single time I'm like, I want to do the Ohio. Which is totally like ridiculous. But anyway, let's pretend I didn't do that. Just move on. So Megan says she just finished episode 160 and she moved back home to Ohio a few years after living in London for 6 years, during which time she spent it immersing herself fully in London. And then what I really like, so she lived very close to me in Greenland Quay in Surrey Quays.
And even closer to me.
Even closer to where you used to before you dumped me and ran away. And she said, I imagine my shock and horror when after years of living on Greenland Quay in Surrey Quays, I finally looked up the meaning behind the name. I was basically living on a whale graveyard. And that is totally true, because that is where all the kind of the stuff came in from Greenland. So it was whale meat, whale blubber, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, all the extra bits were buried beneath, which.
Yeah.
So that's fun. That's a nice way to start the episode, isn't it?
Do you know, at one point when I was looking up something about the sort of Rotherhithe Peninsula and lighting and something, and it seems like there was a big chunk around there that didn't get, I can't remember, gas or electric light or something supplied until a lot later than anywhere else, because they were using the whale oil for lights.
Interesting. That's still what I use over here. My house has got a very very pungent smell to it.
Yeah. Does it count as biodiesel? Biofuel whale
maybe.
Oil?
Maybe.
Don't know. It's not sustainable.
Do you want to do an email?
Yes. So, Lucy. Hello, Lucy.
Hi, Lucy.
Lucy is in Canada.
Oh, man, this is epic.
But she's a Londoner, but now lives in Canada and very much enjoying, found us during lockdown when feeling super homesick. And so very much enjoying a little bit of London. And she says that she wanted to reach out and share something that links back to one of my favourite episodes. So I love, firstly, the idea that she has a favourite episode. but also downloaded, she said, yes, some people watch Friends or Seinfeld. I listen to you ladies. So she kind of listens back to us and my mind is blown.
Oh, Lucy, you need help, darling.
people are not just listening to us once, but more than once. But that's lovely. So the Whitechapel Bell
masochism
episode.
In there, isn't there?
She likes the Whitechapel Bell, but also Saxon London, which is why she was getting in touch. Because
that was you, wasn't it? Wasn't that you as a guest?
It was me. Yeah. Yes.
Or back she's just when I was up to you now, Lucy. Come on.
I was probably just tentatively creeping towards joining you as a host. Yeah. But they have been doing work under the National Gallery. And because there's two wings to the gallery, the Sainsbury's wing and the main wing. And they've never had a very good connection between the two. They can't do it at ground floor level because there's a path that connects Trafalgar Square to Leicester Square. So that doesn't work. So they've dug down and they're doing a corridor down in the basement to connect the two together. But they found lots of Saxon stuff. Mm. And that kind of proves that Saxon London, much bigger than we knew before.
Oh, that's interesting.
Much further west. So it was something that I saw in the news, went, oh, interesting. And then I didn't think to relate it back to the pod. But there you go. Lucy's doing our work for us.
Thanks, Lucy. Cheers. Now get help. I'm going to grab one from Diana, who's come in all the way from Colorado. Honestly, I am so... This is brilliant. Are there any Brits out there? This is amazing. So she says, I did a semester abroad in London in 1990, but frankly spent more time going to the theatre and the pubs. I mean, honestly, Diane. So,
yes, yeah. Well done.
I have a general knowledge of the city and your podcast helps me regain some of my misspent youth. Fantastic. Well, we probably should do an episode on... Have we ever done something on pubs before? Yeah, I don't think we've done... Well, actually, on that note on pubs, and this is totally... very, very selfish, but I'm going to say it anyway. I completely forgot to remind everybody, but this week just gone was my TV debut.
Yes, and I was seen. You were spotted.
Yes, I was spotted.
You were spotted by Lavinia.
Yes, my mum even stayed up late to watch it. I mean, that's dedication. And I say late because they get to be quite early. Anyway, talking of pubs, I was sitting in. I think someone on Instagram, when I put up a photo, went, oh, that's the... Prospect of Whitby, isn't it? And I went, yeah. And then I went, no, it wasn't at all. It was the Grapes. What was I on about? So I was sitting in the Grapes pub with Michel Roux Jr. Mm-hmm. Nattering about pubs. I couldn't bring myself to watch it because frankly, so thank you to everyone else who messaged and said, oh, I saw you. But I forgot to tell everyone, but it's on the Discovery Channel, I think, or something like that. Roux Down the River is the name of the show. And I'm on episode 5. So if you want to go and see me in all my full chemo sweats, that's where you can go. I'm a sexy beast.
Always. And I think actually Lavinia also very on message with us because she said she tried to send us a message on Instagram, but accidentally sent us an invitation to Taylor Swift. So
I'll take that.
That's good.
All brilliant. Good.
Thank you.
Amazing. Well, we're going to leave the emails there because this could get ridiculous. Although I do want to give, I want to try and see if this works again, because the first time we mentioned him, he dropped his lunch. So we're going to mention Matt Brown from The Londonist again, who emailed to say that he'd been in touch and was totally listening along while making my sandwiches. He said, not beef and lobster. Mm-mm. Frankly, what are you doing with your life? And almost dropped the butter knife when you mentioned my name. So here we're hoping for another drop there, Matt. Amazing.
And possible exciting plans there as well.
Don't stop it, Fiona. So before we get into this week's podcast, what do we need to let everyone know anything about London? So, yes, I put something on my stories the other day about the fourth plinth on Trafalgar Square. Vote is now open for what you want next. I don't know when that's going to be, but it takes a while to kind of make everything. But I think the vote closes on the 12th of April.
That's good. Correctly. I'm going there this afternoon to have a quick mosey around. So I'm excited to see. I've already got ones I think might be my favourites.
What are you thinking?
What were they?
Sorry, that was a completely left field question there.
There's one that I was a bit like, I don't understand that at all. There may be a story
there's
behind
always
it
a few
that
like
makes
that.
It sense.
There's always a few that you go,
The cat's quite nice, but it's a cat.
Yeah.
I'll tell you next week.
Untitled, which is the a sort of shrouded, horseback figure statue type thing. I really liked it. I was going to go for either Sheila Berman's piece or Thomas J. Price's piece, just out of a sense of loyalty, because I like both of their artworks.
Yeah.
But actually, when I read up, I was like, oh, I really like that untitled one. And Desper... on Instagram told me, and I have to say, I didn't know this, that you can see, if you go to the National Gallery, they've got the little mock-ups of them all. I didn't know that. I was just looking at them online. But if you want to go and see like the mini versions of what they would be, then you can go to the National Gallery and have a look. But anyone can vote wherever you are in the world. You don't have to be a Londoner. You don't even have to fill in any details. You literally just click, I want to vote for that. And they go, all right, cheers. You don't have to fill in emails or anything. So let's all spam vote the ones we want. but yeah, go and have a little look and see what you fancy. But I think it'll be, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what comes up. I tend to always vote for the things that never get picked. So I'm clearly out of step with the common man. But hey.
I quite like sweet potatoes and yams are not the same, which is a sort of just a sprouting
sweet potato. That was quite mad. Yeah.
So it was the Untitled was the one I didn't quite understand. Looking at a picture of it, I was just like, what is this? So I'm hoping if I go and look at it.
It was the write-up that really got me. When I read the write-up, I was like, oh, hang on. There you go. No, I get that.
Yeah. So then I've only just glanced at the pictures.
So if you want to find out a bit more about them, you can Google Fourth Plinth.
If you
votes.
Or Fourth Plinth National Gallery brings it up at the moment as well. That's what I've just done to find them now.
And you can have a little look and pop in a vote for your favourite.
Yeah.
Have a stake in London, gang. And if you don't know what the Fourth Plinth project is, we probably should mention it. There was always a Fourth Plinth on Trafalgar Square that was empty. There was supposed to be a horseback statue of William
the Fourth.
William the Fourth, which not exciting materialised. Nah, he's a bit dull, isn't he? sorry, Willie. We love you, really. Hashtag Team Willie. But so it was empty for ages. And then in the, how long ago now?
25 years.
25 years, that long, goodness.
There was something the other day about how long it was, and I kind of went, hang on. No, that might have been Poems on the Underground.
Well, either way, while ago,
yep.
They decided they were going to start putting some modern and contemporary art up there on a kind of rolling basis. So it's not planned, I understand, to ever be anything permanent there. It kind of goes in these fabulous different... in fact, no, we have talked about it. We did an whole episode on it, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, you have. Emily.
Emily did it, didn't we? Did. So anyway, go back and listen to that and it will explain all, but the vote is open. So go and pick.
I saw Heather Phillipson doing something the other day and I was thinking, her name's familiar. Why is her name familiar? And then I went, was the ice cream cone with the drone and the thing. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. So
everyone loved that. It was completely mad, but everyone really enjoyed that one. Because
I took a long time to warm to it, I have to say.
A lump dollop of whipped cream with the
I liked it when the drone was spinning.
Yeah.
When the drone rotors weren't spinning, I found it far too creepy.
Okay.
That's
your line.
That's my line. Right. Yeah, I'm sticking to it.
Good to know where you're at.
Yeah. A bit like wind turbines. They're fine if they're moving. If they're standing still, they're less good.
I'm not sure I've ever heard that as a frankly bonkers explanation. Anyway, right, well, here we go.
There we go.
So let's stop with our nattering and get on into the other nattering.
Yes. Excitingly, our first People's Choice episode. Could we call it that?
Yeah, the People's Choice.
The pick of the topic pick.
Yeah, pick of the polls. The People's Polls. Okay.
And it is.
So I lost, but I'm trying not to be bitter about it.
No, don't think about it as you and me. Think about it as this lady sucker punched a few boxers. She took them down with her knockout blow and her implacableness.
You can tell you're a big boxing fan.
Yes.
Yeah, they, you've got all the terminology.
Yeah, absolutely. So she is a lady who would be, I think, will look very familiar to an awful lot of people, especially if you've lived in the United Kingdom, because there's every chance that you walked around with her, a picture of her in your pocket or your wallet for 15 years. We are talking Elizabeth Fry.
I have said, do really like Elizabeth Fry, so I don't mind losing to her.
Well. Yeah. And she was on the banknote. She was on the £5 banknote, which was the picture of her on the banknote is a version of an engraving that was done during her lifetime, which she actually sort of autographed. And in the 1820s, it was sold with her autograph, like a sort of autographed celebrity selfie.
That's amazing.
In a sense, which is rather nice. The banknote did have a slight false start, though, because a few days after they started releasing them, somebody pointed out that you could rub the serial numbers off them. And they had to say, hang on, as you won't, don't, no, don't give them out. We're just gonna
oh my
sort
goodness.
This out.
How did that happen?
I think it was something to do with they were trying to make them more secure, so the paper quality was different, so the printing didn't stick quite. But anyway, it's interesting. She had a slight false start over money as well, so... There you go. So I added her to my list a while ago of people I wanted to talk to when I was looking for people relating to the East End. Because in later life, she lived in East Ham and West Ham, which is not a million miles from where I am now.
North Ham.
North Ham. Then she went to South Ham. She did like ham. Before that, she lived in the city. So I regularly walked past her plaque at the end of Cheapside. And I knew she was a prison reformer, and I knew she had a big hat, very tall bonnet, and I didn't really know much else about her. So this has been very lovely to dive in. Mm. And she was born 1780 in Norwich, which actually I discovered recently my grandparents lived there for a while. I hadn't sort of
really?
Registered that. Yeah. One of the oldest of a family of 12 kids.
Oh, blimey.
But when she was 12, her mother died. So she, I think, took on quite a lot of the caring and the responsibility of raising the younger ones.
Gosh, yeah. So where was she in that number of 12 then?
One of the oldest girls okay. is what I read. So they may have been older boys who clearly are not responsible for caring for the
absolutely
younger ones.
Absolutely not to have been a day.
But same year that her mother died is 1792 is when the Vindication of the Rights of Women is published, Mary Wollstonecraft. And she seems like she wasn't sort of formally educated. They didn't go to school, but they had tutors and nannies and things. And her father was a banker, but very had a good library. He was stocked with Voltaire and Thomas Paine and good books about sort of politics and you know, social.
I love this
stuff.
When there's a library and the girls are just like, "Mom, we're just going to go
I'm
read
just
stuff."
Read the library.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. So quite a sort of liberal, maybe interesting family. You know, her father was a banker. Her mother was part of the family of the Barclay family from Barclay's Bank. So good. Good banking, but not particularly devout. So Quakers, but not massively devout, attentive
right.
Quakers, it seems like, which kind of changes when she's about 18. She hears an American preacher, Quaker preacher, who comes to Norwich, and he talks about kind of the importance of tackling poverty and injustice and things. And she's inspired to go and sort of work with local charities. And one of the things she starts doing is teaching children to read and write.
Okay.
And that seems like that sort of sets her off on her life's mission in a way. But she gets married. Quite soon afterwards, moves down to London to St Mildred's Court, just at the
Ooh,
eastern yeah. end of Cheapside.
Oh, does that still exist? I don't know that one.
It is, it's sort of there, but it's behind a gate.
Right.
If you're, there's a sort of gate that goes to the back door of the grocer's hall, I think.
Okay.
But there's, is it a bank building? It might be the NatWest Bank or one of the buildings that's sort of right at the bank end of Cheapside.
Okay.
On the north side of the street, there is a, she's got a blue plaque and it's kind of slightly on the corner of the building. But it,
right.
Mildred's Court has slightly disappeared. There was also St Mildred's Church, which you can see on old maps and things. So it's not absolutely clear where the court was, but that's the closest
interesting.
That we've still got. So she, yeah, moves to London, gets married in 1800. 11 years later, and 7 children later.
Oh, blimey.
She becomes.
It's 7 children in 11 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and somewhere in the things I was reading, in just one place, I saw a reference to possibly having postnatal depression. Now, I couldn't find anything else saying that, so I don't know where that came from, and there was no sort of evidence about it. But if she was prone to postnatal depression, seven children, I mean,
that's going to do it.
Yeah. So, but
the
again,
of having
that
seven
might
kids
not
make
be
me depressed.
But at that point, she becomes a Quaker minister.
Interesting.
Now, Quakers are the Society of Friends, and they believe that, a bit like the Methodists, everyone can have a kind of personal relationship with God. You don't need a bishop or a saint or anyone else to sort of intercede on your behalf. The belief, each human's ability to experience the light within, and that... Mm. Quite often is the case, this the sort of personal religious experience with Christ is acquired by either direct experience and reading and studying the Bible. So reading and the Bible, reasonably important to Quakers generally. And they're one of lots of different kind of versions and flavours of Christianity that kind of pop up in the 1600s, mid-1600s.
And they do epic porridge.
They do epic porridge, yes.
Also, I like the Quakers because they always seem to turn up on the right side of history.
Yes.
Like they were strongly involved in the abolition of the slave trade.
Yes.
They pop up, they really fight for the underdog and the, I don't know where, you know, when everyone else's moral compass seems to be going massively skew, if the Quakers seem to just manage to pick the right path.
Famously non-violent.
Yeah.
I didn't know this, but
got 19, a lot to do with it, to be fair.
1947 actually got the, were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize.
Really?
Yeah.
Did not know.
To the Quakers in general, represented by the British Friends Service Council and the American Friends Service Committee, were given the Peace Prize. So, and also, I didn't know this, you can also have a non-theistic Quaker.
Oh.
So I can't get my head around this. The whole idea is that we can have a sort of relationship with Christ, but we don't have to rely on the being Christ being there. So it seems like non-theistic ones are Quakers who don't necessarily believe in God, which I might
that's
be able to get on board
with.
That's
more of a spiritual belief, I guess, then. It's more of a kind of belief in, maybe not God being Christ slash God the way that in a Christian sense, but maybe, you know, how some, I mean, I'd say this very much as a non-believer of anything, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, how some people believe that kind of God is everywhere and is not necessarily a person. It's more of a, you know, nature, it's everything.
And,
which maybe is
a lot of people have that thought, like, I don't believe in a specific God, but there is something. Lots of us, you know, a lot of people believe in something.
The universe.
Yeah. So and I think a lot of people, what lots of people know about Quakers is the meetings, people don't necessarily talk, you can just sit and then you talk if you want to, whatever. And it, I think nowadays actually that's quite a small proportion of Quaker meetings are like that. There's some meeting houses are more like that, and some are more with a priest or a minister, I think is the term. Anyway, what else emerges in the middle of the 1600s? Banking becomes big, and there's a lot of Quaker bankers. And chocolate.
Bankers
with a B.
Quankers.
Oh, Quankers. Yes, nice. But also chocolate really kind of takes off mid-1600s. And it was here as a medicinal thing earlier, but the earliest documented evidence of drinking chocolate in England is from 1657, associated with the Quaker botanist and antiquarian John Ray, who was friends of Pepys. So it seems to make sense, actually. I mean, there's quite a lot of Quakers in industry, and particularly chocolate, Cadbury, Roundtree,
really?
Fry's. So my big question about Elizabeth High, is she related to Fry's Turkish Delight?
Ooh.
We'll have to wait and see.
Fry's peppermint cream, one of my favourite things in the world.
There you go.
And so do we know that that's that she,
we're coming back to it?
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so yeah. I'm going to leave you that till leave you tenterhooks with that for later on.
Right.
So 1812, she has another daughter called Hannah Fry, which did make me also go, oh, is she related? I wonder, to Dr. Hannah Fry, the fabulous mathematician and broadcaster, and no. No, it doesn't. Well, I mean, maybe.
Can't have everything.
But no. Yeah. But Stephen Fry is related to the chocolate family.
Oh, is he?
We'll just bear that in mind for later.
Okay.
Right. So, roundabout then as well, 1812, 1813, it's not quite clear. She is persuaded by a friend to go and visit Newgate Jail, which is 10 minute walk from her house, something like that, you know, just across the other side of the city. And she describes her visit to somebody later on. And her description of her visit, we will tell you just after this. She found the female side in a situation which no language can describe. Nearly 300 women sent there for every graduation of crime, some untried and some under sentence of death, were crowded together in 2 yards and 2 cells. Here they saw their friends and kept a multitude of children, and they had no other place for cooking, washing, eating and sleeping. They slept on the floor, at times 120 on one ward, without so much as a mat for bedding, and many of them were nearly naked. She saw them openly drinking spirits, and her ears were offended by the most terrible imprecations. Everything was filthy to excess, and the smell was quite disgusting. Everyone, even the governor, was reluctant to go amongst them. He persuaded her to leave her watch in his office, telling her that his presence would not prevent it being torn from her. She saw enough to convince her that everything bad was going on. In giving me this account, she repeatedly said, "All I tell thee is a faint picture of the reality, the filth, the closeness of the rooms, the ferocious manners and expressions of the women towards each other, and the abandoned wickedness of which everything bespoke are quite indescribable." 2 women were observed in the act of stripping a dead child for the purpose of clothing a living one.
Oh my God, that is...
So, it's...
That's horrific.
It's grim.
And we knew Newgate was bad, but I've never heard that account. That is something else.
So have you talked about Newgate before? Touched on it.
We've definitely, I don't think we've dedicated an entire episode to it, but we have definitely touched on Newgate in numerous episodes.
Yes.
I don't think we've done a dedicated one.
Well, there was something I was reading up this week that made me go, interesting. And that would also touch on Newgate. So we might come back to that in the future. So her response to this was not to run away going, "Oh my God, that's terrible." Her response was to come and stay. Not immediately.
Right. Actually stay like in one of the cells?
In the jail. I don't know exactly where within it. But remember as well, this is an era when there are still public executions going on just outside the front door of Newgate. Newgate is where the Old Bailey is now. Mm-hmm. It was originally the new gate into the City of London, and prisoners were put up in the rooms above the gate, and you know, it became a sort of prison really in the sort of 1100s, 1200s, and it was London's biggest, most notorious, probably least pleasant prison.
It was known as the Seventh Circle of Hell, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, and had been rebuilt. So the prison building she would have known is the one that was rebuilt. I think they finished it in 1872. It had been damaged in the Gordon riots while they were in the process of sort of rebuilding it, and then they had to do some more work. But it is a style described as architecture terrible, which is not just terrible architecture. It's designed to look intimidating, and it's the very look of the prison with this huge, in fact, actually in some ways not dissimilar to the wall of the Bank of England, that same sense of no windows in and a thick wall looming, absolutely. So designed to look, to put people off crime. And it was split. There was a men's sort of courtyard and women's courtyard, but they weren't like entirely segregated. They were just sort of slightly more, seems like. There was also one side of the prison where the wealthy could go and the other side, the less wealthy. And throughout Newgate's history, you could buy food and bedding
and easement.
You could buy not being in shackles if you had the money to do it and things like that. So it's grim in lots and lots of ways. But this is where she has her slight false start, because round about that time there were financial problems with her bank, her husband's bank. And so for a couple of years, she wasn't able to kind of do the things she wanted to do. But once that gets better again, she then starts doing things that are incredibly practical. So she brings in food, not food, maybe food, but also clothes is what I was trying to say. So clothes for the women. She goes and reads to the women.
Oh, wow.
Which also begs, I mean, immediately the question is, what did she read? And oh, well. I suspect it was something improving. It was probably the Bible.
Something biblical, yeah.
Given that we've already said for Quakers, Bible study, very kind of important, that would seem
that
to
would,
make
that tracks,
sense.
Yeah.
She encouraged them to kind of keep themselves clean and things, but also keep the area, the environment around them clean. But intriguingly, she also proposed sort of some rules and things for them. But she then got them to vote on which ones they wanted to adopt. And it feels like she's giving them some control. They're in a situation where they have absolutely no control at all.
No agency whatsoever.
And she's kind of giving them a sense of purpose and things. And she said, you know, this is things that will make them calmer while they're in prison, and then also more able to kind of go back out into society and more successful and things. And what's intriguing, she's doing these very practical things alongside campaigning and stuff. And actually also, so one of the things she does is she gets, there's still lots of crimes that do have the death penalty. Mm-hmm. You didn't necessarily get the death penalty, or even if it was on the statute books, quite a lot of people would not be sentenced
to death.
Yeah,
it'd be quite commuted, wouldn't it? I think more would be commuted than not, usually.
Yes. And she was arguing very strongly sort of against the death penalty. And that then led her on to looking at the conditions of the ships. So the ships, if you don't have the death penalty, you might get transported to Australia instead. Mm. But the ships that were taking people to Australia were, again, incredibly grim, described as being similar to kind of almost as bad as slave ships. And this is, you know, around about the time as well that the slave trade is sort of being
Start
argued
to be
over.
Yeah.
So she then starts giving sort of packages to women who are going on the ships to Australia, because they were going to Australia with nothing except maybe some children with them. And when they arrive, they have no means of making money or supporting their children. So inevitably, quite a few ended up working as prostitutes. She gave them materials and sewing equipment and things, so that on the journey they could be sewing. And then when they arrive, they've got stuff that they can sell. And
wow,
they've got a skill.
That's really forward thinking. Like that.
It's so practical.
Yeah.
And it's really just a thing that has an instant effect. Even if you only give that thing to one person, you've made it better for that one person. Yeah. And once you can see that it's making things better, then it's easy to also motivate other people to go, look, this is working. And within a few years, you could see the impact of her work on the women at Newgate. She also combines that with campaigning about it. And because of her sort of family background and the banking and things, she's, you know, they're a very sort of respectable, well-to-do family. So she has access to levels of society that other people might not. And if we go back to the banknote, there's a picture of her on it, on the right-hand side. But on the left-hand side, there's another picture. And always on banknotes, you get a portrait and another picture.
Yeah.
Who ever looks at the other picture? Do you know what the picture is? I'm sure you do, because you...
Well, saying that, I now can't remember what because the Elizabeth Fry one is no longer in circulation.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume Newgate Prison.
Yeah. It's a picture of... It's her reading to prisoners.
Oh, it's that image. Yes, I know that image. Yeah.
And it's based on a contemporary engraving or image at the time. And
which we will put on the blog. And I should say, gang, every week, Fiona diligently done this amazing blog with all the lovely pictures and a bit of extra explanation. Go and have a look, because there's always something there. So save you Googling, just go straight to our blog.
And some weeks,
like show notes.
Yeah, some weeks are better than others for pictures. Yeah. Last week, lots of pictures. But I do sometimes also go slightly at a tangent. So last week we were talking mostly about the sale of London Bridge to America. But what I did in the blog was more of a kind of history of London Bridge, because that's what we've got pictures for.
She goes off at a tangent, gang. We know this is what she does. We love it.
But yeah, all of these pictures will
genuinely
be.
Go and have a look. And
on the blog.
Also, from my side, thank you for doing that. Because, you know, I think it makes it better.
That's all right. So she's sitting at a table with a book in front of her. She's not actually kind of looking at the book. She's sort of pointing at the book and looking at the women. And then on the right-hand side, there's a collection of eight or nine women sitting around. Some of them are kind of despairing. It looks like they've got their heads in their hands. Some of them are a bit more attentive. There's two children in the foreground sitting on the floor. Intriguing on the banknote, there's the two children, and then there's a woman to the right who's looking down at the children. On the original painting, or whatever it was, the image that was done at the time, there's another woman standing in between those two groups, and she's standing with her back to us, and her sort of top is slipping off over her shoulder, so there's kind of a shoulder exposed, and it changes the dynamic quite significantly. So it's intriguing that they took her out of the banknote image. But
why do we think they did that?
I don't know.
Do
I think it's just she was probably too big in that image, because they
they don't take the full thing, they crop it, don't they?
Yeah, it's more of a sort of vignette of the middle of the original image, and she would have just stolen focus too much.
And I suppose you want to be clear which figure is Elizabeth Fry, I guess, as well.
And it's not immediately obvious which is Elizabeth Fry, I have to say, if you look at it, because she's sitting kind of slightly to the left at the table, but she also has other people around her. And there are two ladies sitting further left with nice bonnets. And then there's a group of about four or five people standing behind, one in quite distinctive glasses, but nicely dressed society people. Mm. And this is absolutely the thing. She had access to a certain sort of person in a way that she could, you know, campaign with. And this is when she went and spent time and spent nights in the prison. Not just her, she invited these other people with her. And she brought them to the prison and they spent the night. And that is going to be so much more powerful than just saying to someone, look, I think this is terrible, you know.
Yeah, if you go and see it for yourself, you're going to get the full unedited version, and you're not going to be like, oh yeah, she's just exaggerating. You'll be like, oh no, this is...
Yeah, but also, if you go to someone's, you know, someone you know and go, look, come with me to the prison, they'll go, I'm not sure. Look, let me tell you, it's really terrible there. It's all these things, but you should come. It's like... She was obviously persuasive.
Yeah.
She also talks to Parliament. We think she's the first woman to give evidence to a parliamentary House of Commons parliamentary committee.
First
woman, 1818. By then, she's also written a book about prisons. She writes a couple of other books later on. She forms a couple of associations. The first one is specifically about Newgate. Later on, it becomes the British Ladies' Society for Promoting the Reformation of Female Prisoners.
Do you know what? They did not come up with snappy names in the Victorian time, did they?
Well, no. I mean, you could make that into a... That would be...
If you... Oh, I know it well. Yeah. Now, if you had said that, I'd have been right in there with the detail.
Yeah, and I automatically did that, the British Ladies' Society voice, because... Yeah, but it is...
That's almost certainly how it would have been.
it's a lady society to reform the female prisoners. So she's sort of connecting the women at both ends, in a way. The driving force of her prison work seems to be the idea that prisons should be rehabilitation and not punishment. And that is slightly depressing, because I think that's still an argument that, you know, we hasn't been won yet.
And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that that is 100% correct.
Yes. I mean, if it's just about punishment, it's an expensive and ineffective way of dealing with an issue. If they're about rehabilitation, it makes perfect sense.
So it cuts back on reoffending. It gives people again a sense of agency, a sense of value, and you know, it shouldn't be. It's obvious, but it shouldn't need to be said. But it does, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's not. I think it's not obvious to everyone. A lot of people would argue very strongly the other way, that prisons shouldn't be, you know, they're punishment. Mm. And that's what they should be. And but she also does lots of other stuff as well. She sets up a night shelter for the homeless and soup kitchens, and starts looking at conditions in mental asylums, which is another whole.
Yeah, we talked about Bedlam before and how horrific that was.
Yeah. Yeah. And sets up a school of nursing. Some of the nurses that trained in her school are the ones that went to Istanbul with Florence Nightingale. Florence cited her as being an inspiration in her work. And generally campaigns for kind of better education and better housing and all sorts of good stuff. Having also had eventually 11 children.
Goodness me.
Her background, family background of bankers, and there's her brother-in-law is a banker as well, and various things, so lots of bankers and things, and I'm just really intrigued by Quakers in a way, because they do have these strong strands in industry, and like you said, the oats and the chocolate we've talked about already and things, and banking, and you don't instinctively go, yeah, those are the good moral careers, you know, but it seems like it's good, it's fine to make money if you then put that money to good use.
Yeah.
And her husband Joseph is Joseph Fry, so she was Elizabeth Gurney as a maiden name, but Fry is her husband's name, and Joseph Fry is the nephew of the Joseph Fry who starts selling chocolate in
there's a Bristol. Marriage link.
So there is a marriage link. What is delightful about this is, so Joseph Fry, who starts the chocolate business, is in the middle of the 1700s. He saw it as a health-giving thing and as an alternative to alcohol.
I couldn't agree more, gang.
Which also explains, you know, the Quakers teetotal as a rule, I think. But in 1777, the chocolate works in Bristol moved premises, and they moved away from Newgate Street. And I rather like that little Newgate link.
So Newgate Street.
In Bristol.
Oh, in Bristol.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Missed that salient bit of my brain.
Yeah.
Funked out at that moment. I like that.
Yeah. So, but I realised when I was thinking about her yesterday that I'd looked up quite a lot about her sort of early life and things, and then, you know, most of the information about her, there's lots of stuff about what she did, and there is this hugely long list of things that she did and stuff. There's very, very little about her personality.
Really?
Nowhere have I found any description. Really, any sort of physical description of her, which actually is sort of slightly unusual, but also nothing at all about she was a, you know, what she was like to have a conversation with. Maybe I didn't find the right sources. But what I think about her is, it's quite easy to see her as being sort of almost part of the establishment because of the pound, you know, being on the banknote and things, but also somehow inevitable. Like, Newgate was really, really bad. And if it wasn't her, then someone else would have come along and said, this is bad. And over time, the conditions would have kind of got better and things. But she's, in a way, she's sort of the opposite of the people that you and I really quite like talking about, who are the mad eccentrics.
Right, yeah.
She is this sort of just, I said right at the beginning, implacable. And you get the sense she just powered through getting stuff done. And I am quite intrigued by people who get stuff done, because I'm not one of them. You are.
No, I'm not.
But compared to me...
It's a low bar.
It's a very low bar, absolutely. I mean, I might get there eventually, but my God, I'm slow. But she, you know, just seems like she goes for it. And what is the key? The first thing she does when she goes into the prison is she reads to people. And as a Quaker, she presumably read the Bible and things. And there is a book that she published. I don't know whether she published it in English as well. The version I saw found was a book in French. So she was publishing these for French female prisoners. And it's a tiny, tiny, tiny little book. There's a picture of it. And it's like half the width of a pencil is the entire book. So it's tiny. Like almost like the ones...
Length of a pencil, surely.
Length of a pencil, yes. Yes.
So that's really small. It's no. width of a pencil. A couple of millimetres.
Just the one you need good letter eyesight per to page.
That. Yeah. It's like a flip book.
No, length of a pencil. But still, that's like an inch per page ish, something like that. The first bit, it was a French devotional thing, so, you know, stuff. The first psalm that was on the page, front page, was we spend our years as a tale that is told. Ooh. So it's all about the story.
And it's funny you said that, actually, because I was thinking earlier, when you're talking about all the different things that she did and that she had a hand in, and that she, you know, with literacy and everything, that we often think, you know, we're one person, what difference can we make?
Yeah.
And the fact that we are still talking about her 200 years later and her impact and what she did just goes to show that you might think that your impact, your what you're offering is really small, but actually it can have a really, really big effect.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not everybody, let's face it, because it depends what you're putting your energy into. You know, if you're putting your energy into posting selfies on Instagram, probably not going to be remembered in 200 years. But, you know, things like this, where you think, I'm just one person, what can I do? I can go in, I can read, I can give somebody a scrap of fabric and a needle and thread.
Yeah.
And you might think, you go home that night and be like, well, I've done a little bit.
One stitch at a time.
Yeah, exactly. That's... But she is the story to be told. I love that. Aww.
And I'm sure there are more books and things, you know, if you inevitably for doing these things, we end up doing research a little bit last minute sometimes. So if you had more time to read up about her, there I'm sure is more details you can find about how she, you know, how did she get to be the person who talked to the parliamentary committee? How did she go about the campaigning? All those kind of things. But they're not... It's not easy to find that detail.
No.
What you get is the headlines of what she achieved.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly impressive. But what was the effort behind it? And what is her motivation? And it does seem like it's, you know, it's that strong belief in equality for people.
Yeah.
And
what I like as well is that she didn't sort of wake up one morning going, right, I'm going to go and solve the problem. And she, you know, she happened to go there and was so shocked by it that it almost spurred her into action.
Yeah.
And I think that's really telling. Because like you said, she's not kind of from the same cloth that you would often place a lot of these people. Like you say, you could almost class her as establishment. So unless she had had that opportunity to go there and be smacked around the face with the awfulness of it, you know, rather than just going home and merrily carrying on being... you know, a lady of the society or whatever, she was like, nah, that's it, I'm in.
Yeah.
Which
and
says a lot to her character, I think.
I think, in a way, with that, if that's why you're doing it, why would you wake up one morning and go, yeah, that's, I've done enough now. So it makes sense that she carries on and she keeps going. And,
And does she have a tangible effect on changing the conditions in Newgate Prison?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. There are two prison sort of reform acts during the time that she's active. The first one is 1820 something, and that was a sort of a first step in the right direction, but it seems like it wasn't always enforced, and it didn't quite achieve what it was wanted to. And then there's another one in 1830 something, which is much more effective. And yes, I think also the work she was doing, the very practical hands-on stuff she was doing at Newgate, definitely had an impact there, and therefore was sort of rolled out more.
Yeah, amazing. I love it.
So yeah, so she has a couple of blue plaques around in various places. She has a stained glass window in a church somewhere. I haven't got that piece of paper in front of me.
Now you said that, I'm thinking, I know I've seen it and I don't know where
Liverpool.
It is.
Liverpool Cathedral, the Anglican Cathedral.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it then. I've never been to Liverpool. Okay.
Yeah, which actually is intriguing. Why, I don't know what her link was with Liverpool, or whether they just, when they were building the cathedral, they just thought, actually, yep, she's good. We'll have her.
I feel like she's in a some sort of window in London as well.
You'd think she would be.
I've got an image of her. It's like a small image in a window of lots of other people. But I might be completely insane.
Is she on Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club?
She might be. Who knows? I'll have a little image.
Actually, her. Also quite nicely, when she died in 1845, and the Lord Mayor of London at the time wanted to commemorate her, and rather than putting up a plaque, it was decided it would be a better tribute to her in a way to start an institution for ex-prisoners, which was known as the Elizabeth Fry Refuge, and it still exists today. It's Elizabeth Fry Charity nowadays. It's in Reading, and it runs a hostel and receives funding from the Ministry of Justice. So it's still doing exactly. It's got 24 beds for ex-offenders, and still doing the very practical things that she did. So
love her.
Hurrah for her. And also, wasn't not everyone at the time went, way, there's this woman doing all this campaigning, isn't that marvellous? Obviously, inevitably, some people went, that's not right, stay at home.
Yeah.
But maybe, that the mothering of her siblings and the mothering, that's she some people said it was unnatural. She was not abandoning, what's the word? Not looking after her own children enough, but maybe she's just expanding that, caring out into the society. So,
and yes, sadly, she's not on the notes anymore. We have one woman on the notes, don't we?
We do.
And only ever one at any given time. Oh, have we got two at the moment? I'm trying to think now.
Well, I wanted to say, and I looked this up and the dates don't quite match, but when Elizabeth Fry was on the note, that was also when we had the first chief cashier signing. I promised to pay the bearer, and then it's signed by someone. But actually she started about 3 years before Elizabeth Fry came in. So the last edition of the previous note also had the first female chief cashier.
Do we know why she was picked for the notes? Because it's quite a thing to be picked to be on the notes.
I mean, I don't know. She is, her blue plaque is very close to the Bank of England. So whoever walked into work, the Bank of England, the banknote designer, whose name I do know, Emma someone, she might have walked past her blue plaque every day on the way into work, depending which angle she came from. Emma Cook was the designer.
Interesting. I like that idea, actually, that you sort of wandering along and just going, oh yeah,
yeah.
We've got Jane Austen at the moment.
Well, I loved when they took Elizabeth Fry away, because they changed the £5 note before they changed the 10. So Elizabeth Fry disappeared from the 5, and then for a while there weren't any women. But they said, no, don't worry, it's fine. Jane Austen is waiting in the wings. Yeah. She's a coming. And you just have this image of Jane Austen, like, ready to pounce.
Yeah.
Almost
on, Jane.
Creeping
on,
up behind Charles Dickens to stab him in the back and take him off the note.
Yeah, so we got men on the others and Jane Austen on the 10.
I mean, we have had a lady on the note.
Well,
quite
we have
a long
the Queen.
Time.
The Queen.
Yes.
And the first, well, she's still on there because the
coming soon though, isn't it?
Charles ones aren't coming out till June.
Yeah,
but they are coming.
They are coming.
Got my first Charles stamp the other day. There we go.
Oh,
it's right here.
I haven't seen one yet. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's. Could they not?
Good, isn't it?
You know the way they used to have the little Queen in the corner when you had a sort of special edition picture of, I don't know, Paddington Bear or golfers or whatever.
Yeah.
You always had the little Queen's head in the corner. Could they not just keep the little Queen's
little
head
queen
in the corner?
In the corner of the Charles one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was doing something the other day and I had to... I was just talking about who was the Colonel-in-Chief of the various regiments, the Household Division, and I put on the slide now because I've got Princess of Wales. And that's fine. I'm not doing the whole HRH. It's like, you know. But then I got Camilla and I was like, do I call her Queen Camilla? Does that roll off the tongue? Not yet. Not
even
quite yet.
King Charles doesn't roll off the tongue yet.
King Prince Charles. That's what I'm
King
doing.
King Prince Charles, yeah.
Because he's Prince Charles. That's who he is. Charles, so he's King Prince Charles. It's fine.
King Prince Charles. Yeah, yeah. First name Prince. There we go. Perfect.
The the royal formerly known as Prince.
Nice. Mm. I like it. I'm going to steal that from you and not credit you.
Yeah. Oh, I stole it from someone else.
Amazing. Well, there we go. That's Elizabeth Fry. Thank you so much. It's funny because I did a fair bit of research for her as well when I did Global Tea Break. But I do a lot more research for the podcast than I ever used to for Global Tea Break because that was a lot shorter.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's a fascinating character, and you came up with more stuff that I didn't know about, which is really interesting. So thank you.
Yeah, and I started reading about it, and then you get into these sort of lists of things, and you think, oh, she's worthy. Is she interesting?
Yeah, she is.
But I think she is interesting in her just
there's not
powering through.
You're right, there's nothing to get into on her, per se.
There's no little stories about, oh, and the time she did this and the, you know, she liked...
When she flipped the bird at Florence Nightingale across the courtyard or something. Yeah, there's nothing like that, is there? But it doesn't matter because I think what she did was so interesting.
It stands for itself. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, there we go.
Yes.
Thanks, Fiona. Brilliant.
We haven't quite worked out who our next option of choices are they? So we'll have to get back to you.
Get back to you on that one, but that'll be for next month.
Yeah.
Well, this is supposed to be a March one, but anyway, whatever. It's fine. It's February. It's practically March. It's a leap year, so we just get an extra day. That's fine.
Yeah.
What else was I? Oh, there was something else I was going to tell everybody, and I can't remember what it was now. I don't remember. Anyway, forget it. nope, genuinely gone. But you're all bored of us talking about it now, but we are very, very excited as it's getting closer and closer.
Yeah.
Our live podcast episode, 20th of March. Come along. Tickets are nearly gone, but there are a few left. We would love to fill the place out. And we've got some fun stuff coming. Leo Hollis. Another guest who shall not be named just yet.
And we should say Leo Hollis talking about Mary Davis, which is genuinely.
I'm halfway through his book at the moment. She's so good. It's a story that, I mean, I think he's the guy who's done all the digging and all the finding out. And it, honestly, I can't tell you how excited I am to chat to him about it. I've got so many questions.
Yes. And there's something else I love about it, which I've had with previous books he's written as well, which I absolutely love, which is you're reading a sentence and it might not even be kind of coherent to the main story. It's just something that's almost an aside, but it makes you see something from a different angle. And once you've seen it, it's blindingly obvious.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, of course.
Yeah.
And I've had one or two of those moments reading the book. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Also, I just wanted to... I don't like using the give a little shout out, but we're going to anyway. The guy who wrote our podcast jingle,
mm-hmm.
Ben Morales Frost.
Yes.
Just wanted to let you know what he's been up to. He worked on Wonka recently.
Oh, yes.
He also worked on Argyle, which is, I believe, Oscar nominated.
Ooh.
It's definitely out at the moment anyway.
Argyle, is that?
He worked on the score.
Is that
for Argyle?
Sort of Duchess of Argyle territory, or
not very much. No, I think it's like a sort of glamorous spy thing with Henry Cavill. And
Ooh.
A variety of other humans. And yeah, so he is he ain't going to be around us for much longer. Let me put it that way. So,
but we've got recording. It's not like he plays it live every week, is it? We don't need him physically. He can go off. And
do you know what? I love him because when we started out the podcast and it was in the middle of the pandemic and we weren't making any money. We had no money. He gave us the music for free, and I've always been very grateful for that. So and watch the space because he's going to be winning Oscars at some point. He's going to be the next John Williams. I'm convinced of it.
Can we bring this round completely full circle and say that the music is the most professional part of the podcast?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Like, I don't think there's any argument there. It's like we get this lovely professional tune and then we're just like, whoa! Yeah, anyway. And this time next week, there will be
another episode. Oh, another exciting person.
Another member of the Ladies in London podcast family.
Yeah.
Actually, not next week because we're going to be recording it before I collect. But next Monday on the 4th, I'm collecting my rescue dog.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Little Rusty. So there may be a chance that Rusty will come to the live podcast recording. If he's settled in enough, I'm not going to promise.
Generally speaking, the tap is very dog friendly. I haven't remembered to check about during events, but
I don't want to overwhelm him because it won't be huge. It'll only be a couple of weeks after he's arrived, so we'll see on that. But there's going to be another little cold wet nose.
Yay.
Just me and you.
Yay!
Who are part of the podcast? So I'm very excited.
Yay!
Yeah,
it's all good.
But I think that's it for this week.
I think so.
All right, we're going to love you and leave you. Have a great one, gang. We'll see you next week.
Yay. Bye.